Hello, 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 and welcome to the Velvet Studio. Now, today we have Amanda Ryan on the line. Are you there?
I'm here.
Excellent, fantastic. And Anne Luthien in the studio with me today. And Sebastian, apparently MIA. So if you can hear this, Sebastian, he says he'll be there in like 2 or 3 minutes. So he's in the doghouse again for being late. Awful, awful, awful. Now, one conversation that his... We normally try and talk about things that aren't really being talked about. So, but when you plan your episodes months in advance, things kind of rise to the fore. And one of the most talked about topics right now is Bill C-16, the bill to amend the Canadian Human Rights Act and the Criminal Code. In specific, it changes the... hate speech legislation and the hate crimes to add gender identity, gender expression as a aggravating factor in hate crimes. Right, I think I got the gist of the act in there. I was trying to tell somebody recently, they said that, you know, this act is huge and it'll have a massive impact. I'm like, if you've seen it written down, it's only about one paragraph. It's like 3 or 4 lines. But, you know, there certainly will be a big impact. Now, Amanda, I know you've been working on this for, I mean, I don't want to say a long, long time, because it's impolite to ask a lady her age, or implied to such, but you've been working on this for a little while now.
Probably about 6 years altogether that I've been personally involved.
For sure, and I think that, to be honest, for people to think, wow, 6 years to pass a bill, that doesn't sound like an awful lot. But what people may not realize is that the act that got... sexual orientation and, you know, decriminalize homosexuality, they were umming and ahhing about adding trans rights to that bill way back when. So this has been a very long time in the making. Can you speak a little to perhaps what that 6 years has entailed for you?
Well, the 6 years is only probably half of the amount of time that the bill's been in Parliament. It started off with Sven Robinson way back when he put in the sexual orientation into the Human Rights Act, and he actually had to delete gender identity to get that bill to pass. But then we've been at Parliament about 5 different times now. This is about the 5th time, with 2 other smaller attempts in there, too. So it's just been a very, very long process of trying to get this bill through, and over that period of time, we keep seeing Canadian attitudes change, and I think that's been the most encouraging thing that I can see over about a 10-year period, is we've gone from transgender barely being spoken on the floor of the House of Parliament to now it's being debated openly. The opposition is using the terms, maybe wrong, but they're using them. And we have an awful lot of support in the House. So it's really encouraging to see those changes.
You mentioned that there's been a lot of work on this, and it's taken such a long time. Now, part of me is thinking, and this comes... earlier today, and of course, for folks, you know, you might be listening to a recording, but earlier today, the Standing Committee on Justice and Human Rights were talking about this very bill. We were alerted to it all of like 12 hours in advance, which is a bit quick. But they were talking about this bill, and somebody said, well, you know, there's so much jurisprudence on it, meaning so many judges and workers, labor board people have made so many decisions where they're already talking about gender identity, gender expression. I think there was like 4,000 hits on gender expression in CanLit, which is, I think it was CanLit or CanLi, the legal opinion database. And then essentially the argument was, you know, why do we need a new bill when there's so much already being said? But I think what this actually is a symptom of maybe is the fact that it's taken Parliament so long to catch up with, you know, the judiciary, all of the provinces. You know, is it a case of this is no longer needed, or is there still an importance to have the federal government pass this act?
Oh, I think it's definitely needed. The fact that the Parliament is finally catching up to public attitudes is maybe a comment more on them catching up. We still need the laws in place. We still need people to understand that you cannot discriminate against trans people. There's still a big enough portion of society out there that doesn't understand us or don't want to understand us that we need to have the laws in place to protect those people. The biggest argument I keep hearing against our bill is, oh, you're already protected under sex, under disability, under sexual orientation. And I keep looking at that and thinking to myself, like, why are those ones in there? If all Canadians are protected under Canadian human rights already, then why is it necessary to mention religion? Is it necessary to mention race? And all the other ones in there. And the reason is that all of those have specific discrimination against mm-hmm. them. There's very definitely discrimination against people of race, of religion, and there's discrimination against people who are trans. So it becomes absolutely necessary to enshrine trans in there by using gender identity or expression to make sure that we are designated and protected.
I want to just mention that Sebastian has joined us in the studio. How are you doing, Sebastian?
Hello. I fell asleep at my desk.
Oh my gosh!
And then I was woken up by Luke's text. I'm being laughed at.
I mean, we've all had those days when we fall asleep at the desk. Yeah. You know, something that can put me to sleep is actually listening to standing committees discuss different things. I mention it and we do a little bit of a chuckle, but this is, the fifth or sixth time the Standing Committee on Justice and Human Rights has looked at this. It's been reviewed by something like 40 plus witnesses to the Houses of Parliament. I mean, this is really quite extensive. But what I think we're seeing now, perhaps more than under C-279, which was, of course, the previous bill that died in the Senate, is that there is almost a different kind of critique here. We're seeing a lot of the old stereotypes coming up. You know, if we pass this bill, paedophiles will be hiding in the washrooms of the women, you know, ready to creep out. And, you know, I just want to take a moment to recall a memory. I was sitting in the public gallery for the C-279 during the Senate committee hearings on it, and they brought in the superintendent for the Ottawa Police Service, and it was a Conservative senator that brought them in, thinking, "Oh, this guy will back us up that, you know, we need to stop the paedophiles." Mm-hmm. And the superintendent essentially said, "Well, if they're a paedophile, we'll arrest them under that legislation. If they're a Peeping Tom, we'll arrest them under Peeping Tom legislation. We don't need to remove a whole group of people's rights just to arrest somebody for a crime that's already happening." Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of folks forget that. If someone's taking advantage of this law to be a Peeping Tom, then they'll be arrested for being a Peeping Tom.
Mm-hmm. I mean, all those things that used to be illegal before are still illegal.
Yes, absolutely.
Except for firing people without just cause.
Yeah,
absolutely. I was trying to tell somebody why it is so important to us as a radio show in the broadcast sector to really advocate for trans rights, because broadcasting, if I myself was trans identified, I could be kicked out from my show, no reason given, just because I'm trans. On any radio station in the country, because broadcasting is fairly regulated. If you run a lighthouse, you can be kicked out for being trans, or in the military, or in any federally regulated industry. Everyone keeps mentioning banking, but there's actually a few more of them. Lighthouses being my favorite, by the way.
Yeah, you've mentioned lighthouses on more than one occasion. You really have.
Like, yeah. How many lighthouses are there?
And to be clear, this is the kind of situation where if you were removed from your job or your housing situation because you are trans or have another gender identity, it's one of those things where the police and the courts, they would sit there basically saying, like, that was a dick move. Like, everyone would acknowledge, but they would also say, but we have nothing on the books to let us do anything about it. Like, everybody would acknowledge that it's wrong, but unless you have that jurisdiction, unless you have that law, what are you going to do? You're going to say, like, you have to give them their job back because... And that would be the limit of it.
Well, the danger here, and I think this is what the biggest critique now is that it's a waste of time, because you're technically wrong. It has been read into sex and into some of the other ones, as you mentioned. But, you know, if you're fired in broadcasting for being trans and you're not a legal expert, how on earth are you going to know that your rights are protected? And I think the Justice Minister,
Jodie Wilson-Raybould,
really made the point of, you know, unless you have a law degree, how are you going to know how to navigate, you know, all of this jurisprudence and interpretations and so on and so forth? It is ridiculous that we're asking an entire group of people to become legal experts just to avoid being discriminated against. And I think that is abhorrent that we're trying to hold that bar. But, I mean, I can rant about this for days.
We could also do an entire episode on how we expect poor people to understand every single legal aspect to do with employment and housing and everything, because they are the most vulnerable sector when it comes to name it. Mm-hmm. I mean, that doesn't reduce the argument for trans individuals. It actually just beefs it up a bit that, like, there's a problem.
So
we're expecting too much of people.
I think if a trans person looks at the law and sees gender identity or expression in the law, mm-hmm. they're going to say, oh, there is a place where I can go to get protection. There is a place where I can fight a human rights complaint within the Human Rights Act. It also, just by having the name gender identity, gender expression in those bills, employers are looking at that and thinking, oh, wow, that's in there. We have to do something for the trans people on our staff and make sure that they're not being discriminated against. So just by having the words in there, companies are already in Ontario putting policies in place to protect trans people. So you don't have to go to the Human Rights Tribunal to have this bill become effective for you. You simply have to have the words in there, and then people realize that, oh, they're there, we can't do that. And that's a big step.
I think you're absolutely on the money there, Amanda, that the impact isn't just dragging somebody before a tribunal. It's under the Ontario Human Rights Commission, they released a wonderful, beautiful guide, and I strongly recommend folks give it a read, looking at gender identity, gender expression, and the Human Rights Act, with guidance on, you know, a poison environment around gender identity, gender expression. You know, legally, where is the gray areas, what you should and shouldn't do? And it's that kind of guidance that, you know, if I was running a coffee shop or a bookstore or
a lighthouse.
Not a lighthouse, because we're talking provincially here, so it's
I see.
You know, if I was running a coffee shop next to a lighthouse, then I would look at this guide and be like, oh, you know, this is how and I should work better with my trans customers and my trans colleagues.
Well, another way of looking at this is the importance of definitions. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it's one thing to say that people from the trans communities can look at gender and sexual identity as a term and see themselves in it. But if the law doesn't define them as being included in it, what does that mean? So, for example, if you're talking about alternate sexual identities, and this is something that's creeping up now, especially here in Canada, is, are polyamorous people, are they included? And by definition, they're not. But the thing is, if you have three or more people in a committed relationship where they're all committed to one another, at least two of them are at least a little bit bisexual. I mean, there's no configuration of two or more people that's mm-hmm. not going to fit into that. But the thing
could,
is,
they could all be the same sex.
Well, I know. That's what I'm saying. Like, minimally, at least two of them are. But they're not defined as being included into alternative sexual identities. And so their rights are not protected. They cannot have, I mean, there's been quite a few cases over the past 10 years of couples who've gotten legal divorces so that they can include a third.
But I think we have to be very careful here, and I'm going to rein you in a little bit, because if we start talking about polyamory, you know, the pundits will be like, next we'll be marrying horses and giving protection to bestiality. And it's a very...
You're not making a counter-argument. No, all you're doing is supporting the fact that we need clear definitions about what we count as being under these kind of vague headings. Because when you say sexual and gender identity, that includes a lot of
stuff. But my point is that a lot of the critics of this law argue that it's a slippery slope to protecting and defining all
sorts. Yeah, but the slippery
slope
is a fallacy.
Moving.
And the minister did mention that when she introduced the law last week or the week before. She mentioned how issues like racism is a very limiting word. And the language we use to discuss these issues can limit the discussion. So this type of legislation has an educational value in that it distinguishes between sex and gender. And it encourages people to understand the difference. And when they understand the difference, they change their business practice. They change their teaching practice, and hopefully they change their psychological therapy practices as well.
And we'll be talking about someone who perhaps isn't changing their practice with yourself in the next half hour. But before we move on, I want to really talk about to Amanda here. Do you think that C-16 will pass? And if so, why do you think it would pass?
I think it will pass, yes. I'm optimistic this time around, certainly far more optimistic than in any other session of Parliament. I think because it's time. I think Canadian attitudes have changed significantly enough that people are beginning to understand or are understanding us and are asking questions about the trans community, are asking intelligent questions and really just want to know, what's going on? What is this all about? Please tell me. And they're getting really positive answers about us. We're getting honest answers, and all we need is honest answers because we've got nothing to hide. The more people learn about us, the more we become just part of a mainstream society, and we're less of that perceived threat. That's the fear that's been out there and has been pushed on us for so long. The perceived threat has been is diminishing because there isn't anything to fear from us. So I think, yes, I think it should go through the House of Commons pretty quickly. Everybody's on side. Then we get to the Senate, and we'll just see what happens there. But I think also in the Senate, we're not going to have the same opposition that we had in the previous one. Certainly Senator Plett won't have the backing of the Prime Minister like he had in the previous Parliament. And nor do I think he'll have much backing from other senators. I think they're all opening their eyes and realizing that this is a legitimate bill and needs to be passed.
Absolutely. And I'm certainly very hopeful that that is the case. Now, I know that you have to dash off, so I want to thank you so much for taking the time to join us. Of course, for folks listening, Amanda Ryan has been a dedicated advocate for the trans rights and a key member of the Trans Equality Coalition, which has been working with this over the last few years. We're going to go to a song by Quantum Tangle out of up north, and this is their track Tiny Hands. And thank you so much again, Amanda, for joining us, and we'll be back.
Pleasure to be here again.
Just after this.
What have you seen in your short long life? Where did your tiny feet roam? All the things you have done on top of being a wife, a mother, a daughter, a home. What have you seen in your short, long life? What has your heart overcome? The traditional ways that are hidden away can be revived by the beat of a drum. Skins that our souls fit within, stitching, nothing can undo.
What did those tiny hands do?
What have you seen in your short, long life? What has your heart overcome? The traditional ways that are hidden away can be revived by the beat of a drum. Summation, our nation still strong. What have you heard in your short, long life? When did they silence your voice? The story stories they spun made you swallow your tongue, made you feel like it was your choice.
And we're coming back to the conversation about trans rights that we left off just a few minutes ago. And we have Anne with us here in the studio. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
And of course, you know, folks may be familiar with Charlie, who actually was at, young Charlie, who was at the announcement of Bill C-16 by Jody Wilson-Raybo. The Justice Minister a couple of months ago now, I think it was. You know, how did that all come about? You know, how did you get involved in kind of the advocacy with Charlie and with this bill?
Well, it started quite a while ago in a sense that it began with Charlie educating her parents. And so mom and dad got to learn early on that Charlie was different. And at first, we just kind of laughed it off as part of a, you know, normal development experimentation phase sort of thing. But over time, Charlie was consistent and persistent and insistent that she wasn't the assigned male, as the doctor said, when she was born. She was actually a girl. She told me when she was late three, no, mommy, I'm not a boy, I'm a girl.
Wow. Young as three.
As young as three and a half. Closer to four. And so that put mom and dad on a learning curve. Mm-hmm. We became more conscious of our own gender bias. We became more conscious of, you know, the stereotypes associated with gender. And we weren't willing to be Charlie's first bully.
Yeah. Mm.
And so we decided unconditional love is what she taught us. She taught us what it meant because she had the courage to be herself despite what her body said and despite what adults expected of her.
Absolutely.
And so we respected that in her, and we admire her and respect her, she's just an amazing kid. So we moved into the city because Charlie was being bullied in the rural school she was in. And we started a new life. And after a couple of years, we had built a network, and Charlie was feeling much more comfortable. We connected with Family Services of Ottawa, who has a group for transgender kids and transgender families. And so we really built a real positive network. And at that point, Charlie heard on the news about the previous government's C-279. Mm-hmm. And she was very upset. She asked me about it, mom and dad, and we sat at the dinner table and talked about it, and she wanted to do something. So both of us, my partner is former military, and I'm an educator, so we decided, well, there's no time like the present to get her actively involved. So we went to the Senate, committee hearings, and there we met Amanda Ryan, who was just on.
Absolutely.
And other great people from the LGBT community and the transgender community who have been working on this for years and years and years. So that inspired Charlie. So she said she did a speech this summer for Pride. She got to be, it was a great honor for her to be chosen as Grand Marshal of Pride in Ottawa. And she said a speech this past summer where she said, and the next thing I knew, I was carrying signs and toilet seats to Parliament Hill because we did a protest called Occupati. And that was to protest Senator Plett's amendment, which would have made C-279 meaningless and ineffectual. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So Charlie, after that, was very upset and very depressed. When the new government was elected and they announced that C-16 was to be passed, the first thing Charlie wanted to do was to meet the minister. And so we joined Amanda and other representatives from the transgender community, TransPulse, all kinds of Canadian Human Rights Commission, and the minister was very responsive. And it's been very heartening to see the leadership by Jody Wilson-Raybould to address these issues and distinguish between gender and sexuality. Mm-hmm. It's a leadership thing, and we couldn't get it in the previous government, and we are getting it now. And so, as a family, we're very, very grateful.
Mm-hmm. I think it's worth mentioning, just for a quick clarity for our listeners' sake, C-279 was not a bill of the previous government, but rather it was a private member's bill from the NDP under Randall Garrison. Just in case everyone's like, oh, I didn't know the previous government did that. Yeah. It was actually...
I'm sorry, yes.
I think it was... I want to say 16 Conservatives, if my memory serves correct, in the House of Commons voted in favour of it, and they crossed the line. And I believe that the Conservatives have a vote of conscience on it this time round, meaning that there's no party vote on the topic, but rather they can all vote according to their conscience, which is important.
Or they're writing, which is ideally what they should be doing.
Well, it's a social issue. Usually it's on social. It's more of a term, like a phrase for what it's called.
Yeah.
Yeah. Vote of conscience.
Yeah.
Yes.
I think so. Anyway, that's just a little of legalese for the folks listening.
Yeah. Thank you for correcting my error. Yes,
oh,
you're
no
right.
Worries. But I mean, you know, I think it's astounding. We actually, I think the first time I met yourself and I met Charlie was at the Occupy protest. I don't think you were able to make it to that.
No, yeah.
And we got this wonderful footage of just like toilet seats on Parliament Hill. Like, that's what an image. And I think. When we were talking to somebody a while back, recently, and they were talking about, you know, it's C-279 was called the bathroom bill and so on and so forth. And I think it's absolute horse crap that it's being called a bathroom bill. Mm-hmm. Because unless you're using a bathroom in a lighthouse or in a radio station, you're already covered. You know, if I go into a second cup, or if a trans person goes into a second cup in Ottawa or anywhere in Ontario, in fact, in anywhere in nearly every province, and they get kicked out for being trans, there are provincial legislation and provincial human rights amendments that already cover it. So wherever you're hearing this, you're already covered under provincial legislation, unless it's in a lighthouse... Or a bank, or broadcasting.
What about trains?
Is trains federal?
Quite often, yeah.
I think via rail. Okay. Yeah.
Anyway, just I'm just don't be knocking me off my lighthouse, you know, run here.
Well, I have a thing for trains, and apparently you have a thing for lighthouses now.
Yeah, this message was brought to you by the Association of Lighthouses.
And unfortunately, the Conservatives have a thing with bathrooms,
because
they reduced it to this argument about bathrooms, and it's not about bathrooms.
It's highly reductive.
Yes, it is. It's a complicated issue that's being treated. Like it's less mm-hmm. worthy of consideration by, you know, mocking it as a bathroom issue.
Now, the issue has been contorted and misrepresented many times. And, you know, we were saying how some of the Conservative MPs reduced it to a conversation about bathrooms when, as we've demonstrated, it's not really a bathroom conversation. But rather, I mean, on the other side, I recently saw a video where trans activists are being reductive and contorting the argument as well. And that was when I was watching the video, and it's worth seeing, where they confront the professor in Toronto who's refusing to recognize gender pronouns of his students.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, you were talking about how slippery slope is a fallacy argument.
It is.
I mean, every third line from a trans activist was a logical fallacy, and it was painful to watch,
mm-hmm.
Which does nothing for the debate. Now, I know that you also disagree with a professor I've forgotten the name of. I'm hoping that...
Jordan Peterson.
There we go. Thank you. At the University of Toronto. You also disagreed with him. And I know that there are other trans parents, parents of trans kids, who disagree with him. What was your reason for disagreeing with him?
Oh, my goodness. Well, there was a number of them. First of all, he is trying to preserve his right to be disrespectful. And under the Canadian Constitution, he doesn't have a right to be disrespectful necessarily. Sure, he has a right to freedom of speech, but there are limits to speech so that they don't incur hatred or incite hatred towards others. Mm-hmm. And as I said earlier, our language and the language we use frames the discussion of these issues. And I think Dr. Peterson has been reductive as well. And unfortunately, he represents a number of professionals and academics who still think in terms of a binary and who seem unwilling to be educated on new research. So there's plenty of new research that says gender and sexuality are complicated issues. There's different stages throughout gestation as well as throughout development once you're born. There's no one answer to a complicated question. And unfortunately, I think Dr. Peterson is trying to reduce this to a simple yes-no premise. Similar approaches were taken before in terms of multiculturalism. So, you know, whether it was disallowing turbans in the RCMP because it would impose the religion on Canadians or affect tradition, it's a similar type of argument. Mm-hmm. And it's based on a lack of understanding and a lack of awareness of the facts.
And I think you mentioned that there's a lot of new research, and I would even contend that this research is not actually that new. The idea that this is more, we're going a bit theoretical here now, but the idea that there's man and woman, good and evil, right and wrong, it's Victorian. Mm-hmm. It is absolutely Victorian. We're talking, you know, late 1800s that, you know, people were putting everything into boxes of two. Mm-hmm. And I feel like we've kind of moved away from that somehow. We feel like there's more than five senses and five elements, so why can't we believe that there's more than two sexes? And which there are. It reminded me of when we interviewed Dr. Simon LeVay, who is one of the world's leading neurosurgeons. No, not neurosurgeons. Neuroscientists.
Yes.
I don't think he does any surgery. He's the world's leading neuroscientist. And he wrote the book, Gay, Straight, and the Reasons Why, which details all of the academic studies that have looked at intersex folks and so on and so forth. And this is something that has gone for a long time. About 1 in 10,000 people are intersex, meaning that they aren't just biologically male and biologically female. And I can never remember what the X's and the Y's are, but there's like
variations.
Yeah. There's variations. I'm very uneducated there. I can't remember what's what, but that's, you know, it's been a long day. The idea being that, you know, we have known for a long time that there is not just man and not just woman. So the idea that he's clinging on to this Victorian dichotomy is just, it's ridiculous, and I'm glad he's being called out for it.
Absolutely. It's an ideology, and he's accusing others of political correctness as an ideology, and yet his ideology is to deny the reality of current academic research and long-standing academic research that proves him wrong. So another professor at U of T did an excellent video that countered every single one of Dr. Peterson's points. And it was very comprehensive in terms of challenging the lack of logic and the ad hominem arguments. Mm-hmm. So that's part of the problem. Dr. Peterson, like many, haven't been educated thoroughly. They think they know. And that was what I wrote in my article. The greatest danger to society is not ignorance, it's the illusion of knowledge, which is a quote from Daniel Boorstin. And that's really the issue here. It presumes, for example, Dr. Martin Luther King said, sure, the law may not stop a man from hating me, but it might stop a man from lynching me. Mm. And that's important. Mm-hmm. And for transgender community, that is life or death. And Dr. Peterson doesn't realize he is having a life or death impact on Canadians.
I think he may suffer from the town to gown divide. Now, this has come up a lot in our conversations, it's the idea of if you're in the ivory tower of academia, you know, you're in a world where you're analyzing things from the theoretical implications. But at the end of the day, the real folks on the street, Charlie, for example, you know, if you're in Walmart. If you're visiting a radio station, keep it federal. If you're visiting a lighthouse in PEI, and Charlie needs to pee, you know, Well, you're not talking, you're not thinking about the theoretical implications of a bill that would allow that to happen. You know, it's the reality of, you know, you got to go, so you got to go. Mm-hmm. You know, that's what that is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, hopefully there's accommodations in lighthouses in PEI. I assume they have lighthouses in PEI.
It's an island.
That's a pretty safe bet. Yeah.
And it's in the St. Lawrence. Yeah. It's probably an icky outhouse, though. It might be. It depends on the lighthouse.
Would they put a light on the lighthouse outhouse?
Well, yeah.
Because that would just be hilarious.
Because what if you have to go at night?
Oh, yeah, because you have to see what it is.
You have to find your way.
Anyway.
If it's a lighthouse that you live in, they would just have a bathroom on the inside, though.
Yeah. I think we're off topic. But the point being that, you know, in the ivory tower, you're thinking about, you know, these theoretical and, the so on and so forth. But, you know, this bill is supposed to protect real people in real situations, such as really needing to go in a lighthouse in PEI.
Mm-hmm.
So
absolutely, and it's similar. Dr. Peterson's argument is very similar to, Member of Parliament Albrecht or Trost, who say their religious freedoms will be affected by allowing or, you know, acknowledging diversity. And, of course, this is a very old and tired argument as well. The camp can't be substantiated at all. There are no limits to a person's degree of belief or practice of their faith by asking them to be respectful, accommodating, and inclusive. That's the Canadian way. And so they're fighting against, the Canadian way, the Canadian culture that's growing and expanding and moving forward, progressing. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, Dr. Peterson can't get behind that. That seems strange to me in an academic environment. It seems that, you know, he's refusing to learn.
It also makes me think, you know, it's not as if Bill C-16 is popping up in a vacuum. Mm. It's not as if we're going, you know, we're introducing this bill and there will be a stampede of trans people, you know, demanding that churches have gender-neutral washrooms. That's not going to happen. That's not how this is going to roll out. What will probably happen is that maybe, you know, the United Church might put a gender-neutral washroom in or something, you know, something small scale like that.
United Church probably already has.
They probably already have.
Yes, they do. The United Way has been, or the United Church has been very progressive in embracing transgender people. So,
but I mean, let's pick a topic that's comparable: the Catholic Church and female bishops. Mm-hmm. You know, in Canada, you can't discriminate on the grounds of sex. Yet this church is able to discriminate against female bishops. Now, it's not as if that's never come up. You know, the Canadian Human Rights Commission and the provincial human rights commissions are very well adept at navigating competing human rights. In fact, there's a great big volume available to download on what does one do with competing human rights available on the Ontario Human Rights Commission's website. It's not new. It's not a foreign concept. So if trans people get rights, God forbid they're treated equally to everybody else. But if they do get rights, it's not as if these commissions are going to be scratching their heads thinking, gosh darn it, where's the boundaries going to be?
Yeah.
There's so much precedent at this
Absolutely.
Point.
And that's, you know, part of what we would, given the opportunity, like to present to Dr. Peterson or conservatives that are unclear. The test here is undue hardship. Reasonable accommodation up to undue hardship. If it causes a considerable amount of undue hardship that can be proven and substantiated in a court of law, then of course accommodations aren't necessary, you know, depending on the situation. So the law already has those protections built in. And our Constitution does, and it's been tested in a variety of circumstances under a variety of conditions. So adding gender expression and gender identity just expands some of those conditions that these tests will be applied to. So it takes away no rights and gives rights to those who have been previously excluded. And so this is why it's so important that the objectors begin to understand the implications. It's a ripple effect.
I read a very interesting critique on the train on the way here, and it was in the National Post, and it was arguing essentially that no one's considered the feminist perspective, and I would disagree with how they've interpreted feminist perspective.
The feminist perspective of trans rights.
The idea being that, you know, and it was framed as the bathroom issue. So immediately alarm bells are going off.
Yeah.
And the idea being that, you know, this is an infringement on women's safe spaces, which if folks recall some of the arguments put out by Senator Plett and repeated again recently when it was discussed during the debate, that, you know, these rape crisis centers are being forced to have men, when I'm doing air quotes on radio, it doesn't work, but men.
Just say, you know, quote unquote.
Oh, yeah, yeah, quote unquote men. you know, in these rape crisis centers, it's the idea that it's a space designed for women, but you're interpreting women as being a very strict biological definition, which.
They're interpreting
ignores
it as being
trans,
females.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely. No, strictly female. So what if you're a masculine-presenting female? What if you're a butch dyke?
Mm-hmm.
What if you're a butch dyke going to a rape crisis center? Are they going to kick you out thinking you're trans? Like, what's... It's just... It is a false argument, and it irks me. It absolutely irks me that these things are being presented in very reputable papers as an opinion against it. Have you come across any arguments recently and gone, ah?
Oh my goodness, yes. the idea, first of all, that women are subjected to assault, sexual assault, increases in a washroom is a red herring. Mm. If they truly wanted to address rape culture, they would have addressed it over the last 50 years of my life and done something far more substantive to protect women. Mm-hmm. Now they're picking on washrooms because transgender women want to access them freely. And so to me, this is another oppression of women, because transgender women are women.
Mm-hmm.
And to suggest that they're not is oppressive. And that's what they're not getting. They aren't recognizing that this is a woman seeking shelter at a crisis center.
Mm-hmm.
And just because she looks or appears to be male or have male characteristics doesn't mean she's a woman less deserving of those services and those supports. So we all have to get over our own biases about what we see and who people are. Mm-hmm. You know, what you see isn't always what you get, and to presume that is part of the problem. So we have to get past the binary and seeing things only in pink and blue. There's purple, there's all different kinds of colors, and the rainbow is what makes it so important. Transgender women are the most targeted people in bathrooms. They need these rape crisis centers, these support centers, because they're so targeted.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to support them equally as we would support any other woman.
Now, as a mother of Charlie, does it worry you what Charlie might grow up to face?
It terrifies me every single day. I don't know if you follow the news. Another child in Ohio killed herself yesterday. Somebody was hung in the UK. In the UK, there's a big issue over transgender rights right now.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody was beaten to death in the United Kingdom just yesterday. Every single day, a transgender kid dies, either taking their own lives or being assaulted and attacked or murdered. This has got to stop. Transgender Day of Remembrance is coming up on the 19th, and this is when we remember all the people that are taken from us every single year. It is a mother's worst nightmare, because when you are familiar, or at least media savvy, and you're connected to the information, it lives in the parent's heart. We don't talk to Charlie about those threats. She's too young, and that's just too much to put on a child. So we carry that load quietly, silently, and we support her in her advocacy, because that's part of making the difference. That's part of changing things, so that maybe when she's 16, it won't be as bad. Things have changed a lot in 10 years.
Yeah.
Maybe in another 10 years, it will change even more. So we have hope. But my partner and I are absolutely terrified day to day. We don't know what could happen to her. Sure, we have provincial, in Ontario, we have provincial codes that protect her. But that's after the fact.
Mm-hmm.
How do we prevent that hatred? How do we prevent people from acting on that hatred? And that's really our goal over the last while, is to educate and to host seminars and have people learn about it.
Mm-hmm. And I think that touches a little bit on the other element of the changes to law, which is the hate crimes aggravating factor. And I think there's also some misinterpretations here that I was made aware of, you know, that someone said, you know, if you disagree with trans people, you can get arrested for it, which is so not true. I mean, I disagree with trans people. Some of my good friends are trans people, and I very verbally disagree with them. Like, it's a thing that I, and I'm not looking over my shoulder to see if the RCMP will roll up.
Do you disagree with them about trans issues? Or
sometimes,
about, or
yeah.
about lighthouses?
Well, I hold the strongest of opinions on lighthouses. But yes, I hold the strongest of opinions on lighthouses. But the reason why I say this is because we're talking about hate crime. So if somebody was to beat the living bejeebus out of somebody, that's assault, that's aggravated assault. It could be assault with a weapon. Mm-hmm. It could be attempted murder. You know, and if they did that because they are trans, which to normal people listening to this radio show, you'd probably be thinking, oh, that's ridiculous. Who would do it just because they're trans? Well, sadly, so many people do.
Yeah.
And so many trans folks are beaten and left for dead in Canada.
Yeah.
It is deplorable that, you know, this bastion of freedom and human achievement that is Canada has this dark and desperate underbelly.
There's this huge assumption that this kind of thing doesn't happen in Canada, or it rarely happens in Canada. Now, let's assume for the moment, just for the sake of argument, that it does rarely happen in Canada. Even if you do assume that it happens much less here than anywhere else in the world, it still happens, and that's not a good thing.
Mm-hmm. But what this bill would do is, if, let's say, God forbid that happens, and they get caught, they will be done for assault or attempted murder, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But they will be punished that little bit more.
Yep.
To show the trans community and to show everybody else that it is unacceptable to do that to trans people just because they are trans.
Yep.
And that is the difference. That is the difference. It is a way of showing the community and showing Canadians that targeting people just because they are trans mm-hmm. is unacceptable in Canada in 2016. Do you think that's an accurate interpretation?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it goes even further than that, because you can think of the implications in terms of keeping track of hate crime. Currently in Canada and the United States, we don't keep track of murders of transgender people as a hate crime. Hmm. So Bill C-16 will make keeping track of that a part of the research that we will rely on in the future.
Mm-hmm.
The other issue is insurance. Imagine insurance in the issue of gender.
Mm.
Imagine all these other issues that are so closely related to this.
Mm-hmm.
So hatred is something you combat with education. And I think that's the point of this bill. It's to be more clear mm-hmm. and to invite people to take a deeper look.
And even then, actually, it's when we were talking about the ripple effect of gay marriage back in 2003, I think it was, it wasn't just about marriage. It was also about adoption. It was about mm-hmm. hospital visitation.
That's
it was
right.
about readings of the will. It was about a lot of things.
That's
a lot of these things that we take for granted, very sort of civil, sort of bureaucratic things that have to do with normal life and death, they're not necessarily protected. Or if they are protected, it's basically on the whim of whoever's enforcing it. So like a lot of police forces in Canada do keep track of violence against trans people, but that's because they've made that choice. Yeah,
that's right. And there's no federal, you know, leadership in that area.
Mm-hmm.
And C-16 may inspire that. It also may inspire programming. It may mm-hmm. inspire, for example, in Alberta recently in Medicine Hat, a judge recently ordered a child to wear the clothing of their birth gender.
Mm-hmm.
If you can imagine that. Think children's rights.
Yeah.
Think, you know...
Yeah.
The autonomy of children to choose who they wish to be.
Mm-hmm.
Who are we to dictate to a child who they should and shouldn't be? You know, we certainly consider decorum and rules and circumstance and behavior. But other than that, Charlie has the right to choose who she wants to be.
Mm-hmm.
And why should the federal government step in to tell her who she should or shouldn't be, or even a judge for that matter?
And that really, really concerns me. It absolutely concerns me. concerns me, because we had an interview with, I did a TV show with the city's leading endocrinologist, and I've blanked on her name.
Dr. Lawson?
Yes, Dr. Margaret Lawson at the Children's Hospital of Eastern Ontario.
Yes.
And, you know, if not one of the province's leading experts on this. And the conversation really was around if you can realize your own gender that young. And the answer is absolutely.
Yep.
And the damaging effect on the psychology by having that opposed is why trans people have, you know, 4 or 5 times the suicide rate.
Correct.
By a judge telling a youth that they have to dress in their assigned at birth sex is a death sentence, and I very much believe that, and I think that there is good evidence to support that.
Absolutely. We have a 43% suicide rate. That's unheard of. That's 10 times the Ontario cis-normative rate.
Which is just...
It's
madness.
Staggering.
Absolute
and this
madness.
Is why parents are terrified. This is why we get into advocacy. CKCU has Amanda Jette-Knox on Fridays as well, another mother advocate. So there are a whole group of advocates who are trying very hard to fight for their children, because their children will become teens and adults. Mm-hmm. And we want them to be healthy and happy and accepted. And we can't do that if there aren't laws on the books to say it's not okay to hurt them.
Absolutely. Now, you can find out a lot more by looking on, as we mentioned, we've actually mentioned 2 or 3 episodes that we did previously, www.velvetstudio.ca, for more information on those shows. Unfortunately, we have hit the hour, give or take. We will be playing out with the Peptides, a very, very fun band that I'm a big fan of.
Yes.
And their new song called 202 Washington, D.C. Now, check out the video, because it's a bit of a rickroll on Donald Trump. And we've tried to avoid conversation about the blasted U.S. election.
Yes.
That just never ends. But this video is hilarious, and the song is pretty damn good as well. And that's all from us for now, and we'll see you next week, where we're talking about Bi Erasure.
Do it.